Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to issue 4018 of the Bugle, official podcast of record for the human race. Still the world's leading species in terms of achievement levels, if not necessarily standards of behaviour anymore. I'm Andy Zaltzman, live in London, and joining me once again, the globe-trotting force that is Nish Kumar. Hello, Nish.
Nice to see you, Andy. I'm back. Back in the United Kingdom.
You say that every time you're on this show. Your passport is taking an absolute hammering right now.
Not well, just my passport, but my chances of ever actually being able to go to America have absolutely taken right. a pasting on a level of George Foreman in The Rumble in the Jungle. Right. It is a real... Yeah, I've been in the Philippines for a bit, and then I was in China. With the Kung Fu monks at the Shaolin Temple.
Right.
It was pretty great.
Yeah.
Here's what I've learned, Andy.
Yeah.
You don't mess with a monk. You don't mess with a monk. You don't f*** around with a friar in China. Those dudes are serious. Absolutely
right.
Serious.
Did you learn some sweet Kung Fu moves?
I participated in the stretching.
Right.
At which point, I believe the technical phrase is retired hurt. The warm up was so intensive that I had to be excused, and I ended up taking an hour long meditation class, which it turns out equally bad at.
Right.
Like, I was as bad at the physical as I was at the mental side of things.
Right.
It's really hard to meditate.
Right.
It's really hard because as soon as you sit there, you're like, am I meditating yet? Is this meditating? Am I meditating? Am I meditating? At which point, you have failed at meditation.
Right. I've never consciously tried to meditate, but, I mean, is it not just basically the same as watching a county championship cricket match?
Andy, the Buddha found enlightenment by sitting under the banyan tree and contemplating the nature of human existence.
Right.
You found enlightenment at Glamorgan versus Sussex.
There are many paths to the same destiny.
The Tao, according to Zaltzman.
This is the Bugle for the week beginning Monday, the 27th of February. On this day, in the year 425, the University of Constantinople was founded by Emperor Theodosius II, bloody elitists, at the urging of his wife, Elia Eudocia, bloody feminists. Let the Constantinopolitans live their own lives, Theodosius, you jumped up half-wit micro-Caesar. Don't impose your intellectual snobbery on them just because your missus has got you under the thumb. Sorry, I know we shouldn't impose our modern advanced values on the attitudes of the past. It was a different world then. Also, we're recording, in fact, on Thursday, the 23rd of February. On this day in 1903, Cuba leased Guantanamo Bay to the USA in perpetuity for use as a coaling and naval station. I mean, it's slightly diverged from that original.
Look, Andy, it's
intention.
A buy-to-let market.
Well, we're not really talking about the Philippines. Did you like go on some gangland slayings with the president?
I went on a couple of gangland slayings. when you're in the Philippines, you want to take in the spectacular surroundings, the delicious food, and participate in the summary execution of a couple of drug lords. That's in the Lonely Planet guide. What am I supposed to do? What would you have done in the Philippines, Andy? Not assassinated a known drug dealer? And when I say known, I mean an entirely unknown, but it doesn't really matter because he's the president. Anyway, so who's going to stop him?
Well, exactly. When in Rome. I eat pizzas in Rome. You slay drug lords in the Philippines. As always, a section of the Bugle is going straight in the bin. This week, a tech business section, including the latest company valuations. We look at FridgeTech, the startup app developer, which creates an app that helps people find jars or sauces and other condiments in their fridge. Some of their apps include Resourceful, Heyo, Where's My Mayo, and Ketchup Catcher. FridgeTech, the Bay Area sophomore, made a loss of $950 million in its debut year, meaning that it is now valued on the markets at $560 billion. That looks like a sound investment there for any buglers who like to back a surefire winner. And we look at Vendetta Corp as well. Their Spook My Nan technology can take control of someone else's smart-enabled home and basically act like an online poltergeist. Originally, of course, designed for people who wanted to put the willies up elderly residents. relatives to convince them it was time to move into a home so they could sell their house. Now rolled out to cover other social groups and building types, including ex-partners and business associates, as well as schools and hospitals. Vendetta Corp's turnover last year was in excess of $2,500, giving it a current market capitalisation of $1.2 trillion. And also we look at, in other tech news, Elon Musk rival Pilau Snork's latest trying to compete with a driverless car. He's about to roll out, quite literally, the riderless motorbike. That could be a very exciting development in travel. And also a special jobs in the tech business section, including, a job that's just recently come up, a new tech editor for Breitbart's vacancy just come up this week. Qualifications, according to the advert that I may have made up, could you look a starving child from a famine zone in the face, eat 2 half-pound cheeseburgers and a kilogram tub of ice cream, whilst eyeballing that child with the cold, dead indifference of a true believer, and then say to it, "You, mate, are a hungry little c-," then you could be just the kind of person Breitbart are looking for, salary enough to be worth flaunting, plus bonuses including the adoration of thousands and the visceral loathing of millions. So do apply if you think you fit that bill. That section, in the bin.
Top story this week, I hate you so much right now!
Well, thanks. That was one way to get that out of your system. You didn't have to look me right in the eye when you were saying that, by the way. Starts to look like a hate crime.
You've never missed the Skype connection with John Oliver more than that moment, have you? Andy, Amnesty International has released a report.
Right.
Now, when Amnesty International releases a report, it is almost never a good thing. An organisation that exists solely to monitor human rights and their abuses across the world, whenever they come out with anything, it's normally not pleasant. So, they've released a report this week. Is it in a multiple choice answer?
Okay.
Is the report this week about ketchup versus mustard?
Oh, right.
Is it if Sticky Fingers is the Rolling Stones' best album?
Ooh.
Is it whether La La Land is a good film or not?
All right.
Or is it everything is terrible? I'll give you a second to think about that.
Right. Well, possibly. They've probably got to have an opinion on B. Sticky Fingers got a strong claim.
Andy,
you're looking at something pre-75, certainly. But anyway, look.
You should not have taken this long, Andy. The answers to all of those questions are clearly ketchup, yes, sort of, and oh my God, everything is awful. Yeah, Amnesty International have published a report this week criticising...
When are they going to do a report about all the people who are rightly in jail? That's what I want to know.
Yeah. When are Amnesty International going to congratulate us for finally bringing Bernie Madoff to justice? Where is that report, Amnesty?
When I got a speeding ticket for going at 45 miles an hour and a 40 limit at 2 a.m. on the M4 coming back into London after a late night gig, where was Amnesty International's letter saying, "You deserve that, mate, you f***ing deserve it, respect the law"?
Yeah, I know, your human rights have been flagrantly abused.
They have.
They're too busy with all this political prisoners bullshit. But where is their protection for British stand-up comedians who frequently have to take late-night drives?
I know, shocking.
It's absolutely shocking. Well, anyway, the report has said that politicians who are wielding a toxic, dehumanising us-versus-them rhetoric are creating a more divided and dangerous world.
Yeah, but they're also getting a lot of W's in the results column as well.
Isn't
democracy fun at the moment?
It's hard to say whether this is a criticism or not, because if in us versus them, I mean, them has definitely scored a severe victory in the last 12 months, where us is sane people and them is the crazies.
Yeah, I think, us definitely, tactically, far too attacking, going with the old 2-3-5 formation. Really didn't shore things up at the back. Amnesty International, or as they are known by some on the right-hand edges of the political cesspit, Snowflakes for Stalin International. Come on. These losers ended up in jail. They lost. Get over it, Amnesty. They also claim that 36 countries broke international law and forced refugees back into conflict zones or places where their rights were at risk. That's... That's quite a lot of countries to be kind of batting, playing the Federer backhand on refugees.
Yeah, that's right. And Britain is one of those countries.
Right, one of the 36 who put the c*** into country, according to the official words of the report. Actually, they might not have used those precise words.
I think Amnesty International would get a lot more kudos and have a sort of wider proliferation if every so often they just went, you know what? These people are being total c***s. Total c***s. And instead of the sort of the barbed wire around the candle logo, if it was just a man just flicking his middle finger at a picture of Donald Trump.
Well, that's, I mean, that could be the future. Everyone needs a rebranding every now and again, don't they?
Yeah, that's right. And the artist formerly known as Amnesty International, who are currently known as Go F*** Yourselves, c***s, would get a lot more. So they've criticised a bunch of world leaders. The four that they've singled out are Trump, Orban, Erdogan and Duterte.
Can you single out four things, Nish?
Oh, yeah, that's
Is that not quadrupling out?
The four leaders that they've quadded out... The four leaders that they've quoted out. And when you read them as a four, you do start to think, well, I mean, they've remade the Fantastic Four a couple of times. Maybe it's time for another reboot. Only this time, instead of superheroes trying to save the world, it's four lunatics trying to build gold statues of themselves.
Yeah, well, Nish, there's some pretty appalling characters in that list. I mean, if you can tell me a worse leader in the world right now than the Turkish guy, I'd be surprised. I certainly haven't heard of one. He's a He's a recipe for disaster.
I would like to put a message out to Amnesty International now to free me from having to listen to
this.
You
should thank them for only putting four on the list, frankly. And as for that clown in the Philippines, I mean, he's obsessed by his manhood and his inflated sense of self, and he's corrupt. So, in summary, driven by his rod or ego, too dirty.
You know what? I support that one.
Don't. Okay. And,
come on, Chris. That took a lot of work.
I'd hold a competition to see who loves the Hungarian leader the best, just to kind of flush it out, and then stop the winner from competing again, either temporarily or permanently.
Oh!
So I'm talking about a suspension for the victor, or ban him. Or ban him completely.
That joke is a violation of my human rights.
Well, that makes it a meta joke in the context of an Amnesty piece. Doesn't it? Right. Wesley, I think I've done enough Trump puns over the last cryptic crossword that we're still recovering from. Sorry, let's go back to the show, Nish.
I say we're still recovering from, Andy. I'm still very much in recovery from that one.
But it was a bit of a slap down for the UN over Aleppo in particular, after the International Political Dating Agency sprang into action like a coiled yoghurt, stood up for the afflicted like a four-day-old portion of half-eaten battered haddock, and fought their corner like a Battenberg cake fights a grizzly bear. It's a pretty depressing read, this report, Nish. Yeah. And they could do with lightening things up.
What's also worse is that they've sort of broken down all of the countries and kind of given a little explanation of their human rights violations by country. And it just is quite a relentless read. Obviously all the aforementioned countries are in there, the Philippines, the US, even the United Kingdom has made an appearance this time. Normally we just used to call our human rights abuses spreading the empire. So it's a bit of a change.
Let it go, Nish. You're doing all right, aren't you? Let it go.
Never, Andy. Never. Cricket is not enough of a compensation. I keep telling you this.
How can you say that?
But it's not really been hugely in the headlines of late, but luckily, Saudi Arabia,
all right,
the Roger Federer of appearing on lists of countries violating human rights.
It's wanting to get on it, but to stay on
to
it so consistently.
Stay on it. Got to admire the consistency. It's absolutely incredible. Under Saudi Arabia's criticism, says critics, human rights defenders and minority rights activists have been detained and jailed on vaguely worded charges such as insulting the state. And all I can say is, Andy, thank God we do not bugle from Saudi Arabia. If the British government ever brings in that sort of regulations, you and I are going to be in jail faster than you can say go f*** yourself, Theresa May.
Britain did get a bit of a slapping as well. The Brexit referendum was, quotes, a particular low point. and the report pointed to a 57% spike in reported hate crime the week after the votes. That's a democracy. That's what we wanted as a nation. People have spoken. We wanted a spike in hate crime. Britain was also criticised for introducing, quotes, one of the broadest regimes for mass surveillance of any country in the world. Well, it's just the government keeping a friendly eye on us, isn't it?
Well, maybe they're just recording one long podcast.
Well, this is possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's, my life does feel like that quite often. Do you work for the government, Chris?
Yes.
Oh, right. Shit.
Oh, great.
I should have asked that before. But I think this is a good thing. It's a two-way bobsled run, surely. I mean, if we want to keep an eye on the government, Nish, surely we have to accept that they might want to keep an eye on us.
Transparency.
Yeah, that's
right. What it's all about.
Two-way banana.
Also, I mean, if the government is currently spying on me in my house while I'm on my own, I would like to apologise to whoever that spy was, because that spy has seen some truly reprehensible behaviour.
Well, you should never have got that karaoke machine.
No, I shouldn't. Yeah. I certainly should have shoved it up my arse.
Family show, Nick. I know you're relatively new to this. Family show. How am I going to get this on mainstream television if you keep coming up with shit like that?
I just done a really good version of Islands in the Stream, Andy. What do you want from me? I have to celebrate somehow. I've sung both the parts as well.
It's interesting, this toxic talk that is discussed. I mean, I guess, we see this all over the place. The internet is... I mean, it has been one of the great growth industries in the world since the start of the internet.
Absolutely.
Toxic talk.
It's
become not just widespread, but extremely lucrative, it would seem, as well. I guess one of the positives of all this toxic talk machine, the outright, and we'll touch on this in a minute, because there have been certain developments in the outright of late. Overpopulation, clearly one of the major problems in terms of environments, migration, food supplies, water supplies. And if, leaders like Trump, Duterte, all those cats are basically going out of their way to make more and more people think, I do not want to bring children into this planet. But surely that has to be good long term in terms of reducing the number of little carbon footprints pitter-pattering all over the world.
Yeah, but I would say, even if we follow that logic, these guys have overcorrected. Because it's one thing to say maybe we shouldn't have more children born, but it's another to say maybe we should start executing some of the adults. The best way to stop people procreating is to stop them from existing.
Right. I mean, I'm having second thoughts myself. My little blighters are aged 10 and 8 now, and when I took my daughter back to the hospital she was born in, they said she was out of warranty. News is acting as it'd be very interesting to see if birth rates do dip in the 2016-2017 era, because it must be a bit of a passion killer. Darling, shall we try to make a little baby? Sure, I'll just watch the news headlines, then we can pop up to bed and get down to business. Okay, love, I'll put the telly on. I'm not really in the mood anymore, darling. Shall we just stare glumly into the middle distance, wondering what has happened to the concept of dignity? Yes, let's.
Are you suggesting the news is now acting as a sort of anti-Viagra?
Yes, I am. I am suggesting that.
The news is a boner killer.
Yeah, I think, that does mean that soon the Catholic Church are going to try and ban people from watching the news.
It's against God's will. The problem with this is that the Amnesty International report is obviously rigorously researched and well argued, but will it make a blind bit of difference to any of the people it's aimed at? And the answer to that question is, no! Amnesty International, to most of the political leaders in question and their supporters, will always and only ever be the bad guys from 24. I don't even remember who remembers 24.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I watched every single series of that.
Yeah, but in every series of 24.
My favourite documentary.
What access? Absolutely amazing access. Yeah. But in every series of 24, Jack Bauer would always constantly be trying to sort of, rip some guy's nuts off to find out where a bomb was hidden.
We've all done it.
How do you think Andy got me to agree to do the Bugle? But they would then, and then there'd be a call from Amnesty International. And the problem is that I think that that's how a lot of people on the extreme right of the political spectrum view them, as sort of obstacles to progress. I mean, just reading Amnesty's comments about America, This is what they've written. An election campaign marked by discriminatory, misogynist and xenophobic rhetoric raised serious questions about the strength of future US commitments to human rights domestically and globally. Now, if you put that to Donald Trump, presumably he would say, great, I've absolutely nailed this.
Yeah, and probably sad in capital letters at the end of a tweet.
Yeah.
Another report on Trump suggests he's absolutely hammering it out of the park with an average of four pieces of bullshit per day. Which, I mean, that does seem like a low estimate to me, but
yeah.
This is the report on the Washington Post's fact checker page, or as it is known in the White House, Lenin.com. I mean, that seems a low estimate given that he said an average of more than four words per day. You'd think there'd be more than four pieces of bullshit. They've credited POTUS45 with 163 misleadments, factual twisty twisticles, and outright porkies in just 34 days. Another counter report suggests that Trump has told 120% of the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So you've just got to choose which of those you believe.
It doesn't surprise me that it's four statements, because regardless of the word count that Donald Trump is putting out on a day-to-day basis, he very often only gets around to four subjects due to his truly unique approach to speaking. Because he sort of repeats words over and over again and sort of goes back on himself. When you look at it, he's often only talked about three subjects in right. a 40-minute press conference.
It's like a political Stuart Lee.
There has been some better news for opponents of hate speech, which I really did. I really wish that didn't now have to be classified as a minority group. people who aren't actively in favour of hate speech. Milo Yiannopoulos has been the subject of controversy this week over some comments that were not found, because the footage has been around for quite a while. So I guess we have to say comments that were heard.
Yes, forgotten about.
Forgotten about.
Yeah.
On Eternal Sunshine, essentially, that he made about seemingly supportive of paedophiles. And say what you will about Milo, but he loves an underdog. He is a true contrarian. But this appears to have been the straw that has broken the racist, sexist and homophobic camel's back. Because the
that is a remarkably tough camel.
Sturdy camel, Andy.
Yeah.
Sturdy camel. But that has, because that's now resulted in a conservative group. He was due to speak at the CPAC, which is the Conservative Political Action Group. They dropped him after the remarks came to light, and Simon and Schuster have cancelled his lucrative book deal, and he has now voluntarily stepped down from his previous job as Breitbart's tech correspondent. Breitbart, of course, the website set up by Donald Trump's advisor and looking unwell magazine's Man of the Year, Steve Bannon. He looks so unwell.
Yeah.
Every time I see a picture of his face, I think, you know, dude, right. Peel orange or something.
You've got to stop eating your own soul for breakfast.
His face looks like scurvy. I didn't even know that was possible.
That was the B-side of Smells Like Teen Spirit. I mean, it's interesting to see the breadth of the reach of the young alt-right. Recently also won an award for least diverse social group in the universe, after even knocking out Popes, the traditional winner. The Archbishop of Canterbury...
I know him well.
Yeah, 102,000 Twitter followers. Paul Joseph Watson, another young man popular in alt-right circles, more than 500,000. And that is how you judge people now, but purely by the number of their Twitter followers. The Church of England's Twitter account, 67,000. Even the Archbishop, plus the Church of England, is only a third of a man sitting in a flat in Battersea. It's a mind-bending technology, the internet.
Yeah.
You know, it's beyond space age, but it has uncorked an unending Krakatoa of sub-medieval behaviour from all sides of the political swamp and all crannies of the religious cave.
It's, yeah.
You basically, the way the internet worked, and I need to take a serious break from reading stuff. I think just at all. Not just on the internet.
I'm worried about
it. The problem is you get books out now from the library, and because we live in the age of the below-the-line comment, you get some ancient manuscript out, and someone will have written, who's this f***ing cunt writing this shit? Oh, f***ing no. The f*** does Galileo know about f***ing planets, chicken f***ing prick?
Chris, they're really writing hard in the old swear log.
And also, on the so newspapers report these things, so you get, you know, depending on which side of the political spectrum the newspaper site's coming from, you'll see some headlines saying A destroys B, and then you'll see from the other side B destroys A, and they both link to exactly the same clip of two people talking over each other to no discernible purpose. This is the world we live in.
And it's, I'm worried about you, Andy, because I've realised that in doing the Bugle with sort of a weekly frequency again, you are really staring into the abyss. Every, because for us, the rest of the guest hosts, it's kind of like a misery relay. But unfortunately, in the misery relay, you are the baton. Is there ever present?
Can I put that on my poster for my next show?
A baton in the misery relay. Yeah, absolutely you can. Because you're really... And the thing is, there is so much of this misery around, because the alt-right are everywhere. And it's a term that was sort of semi-coined by a political philosopher called Paul Gottfried in 2008, but then was really seized upon by a dude called Richard Spencer, who is the head of the National Policy Institute, which is an extremely right-wing think tank in America.
Now, that sounds like quite a sensible thing to have, a National Policy Institute, doesn't it?
Absolutely does, but it is also, so does National Socialism.
Yes, I guess so.
It's part of...
Well, labels are tricky, aren't they?
The grand lineage of things that sound fine that absolutely aren't. But Richard Spencer is a white supremacist, and I feel very comfortable in saying that, because on his Wikipedia page, he is described as a white supremacist, and there is no citation needed next to it. Bear in mind that for a time, my one said that I was a comedian and it had citation needed next to it.
Boom!
Blammo! Take that, myself.
Of course, there are a number of new heroes of the alt-right bustling to jump into the void left by Milo, at least for the time being. We'll give you a quick guide to them, because I guess most Buglers probably aren't natural subscribers to the alt-right, although maybe in future generations, because Breitbart's got a kids channel now.
I mean, it's the Bugle looking for a new permanent home, Andy.
Right, well, heart attack.
We've got a little clip actually from the kids are alt right on the Breitbart channel. Hello, kids. This week, did Muslims kill the dinosaurs? How to shoot your way to good grades? And shouting at girls, how to make them cry every day. So, really catching them young now. But anyway, the new heroes of the alt-right from Britain. Finnegan Gringlebury, 21-year-old graduate of Membry Services College of Lesser Education on the M4, west of London. Gringlebury is the author of the right-leaning blog The Two Truthful Truth, which exposes left-wing media bias in kids' TV, such as the episode of Postman Pat, which, if you play it backwards with the images flipped vertically, he claims looks like footage of Joseph Stalin waving at a parade of Soviet tanks. And the three consecutive episodes of the hit kids show In the Night Garden that did not mention Margaret Thatcher, plus an entire day of programming on the Nickelodeon channel that managed to avoid showing a documentary proving that all climate is a hoax. He has 8.9 million Twitter followers. In America, Jonathan Jarvell Jr., former editor of the anti-sanity schlock vlog site Crazy Talkers, where he gained notoriety for his claim that if Barack Obama had been a turkey, he'd have eaten Father Christmas, now works for the far-right website Come to Uncle Dick Dick, writes articles such as If Immigrants Were as Great as the Snowflakes Say They Are, How Come Neil Armstrong Was the First Man on the Moon, as well as videos entitled The Mainstream Media Won't Let the KKK Do the Super Bowl Halftime Show Because Jimmy Carter Is a Muslim. And if I'm not allowed to scream you're a f***ing bitch at a baby in a shopping mall just because it might be female, then gay people shouldn't be allowed to buy cars. And also Kay Lucian Flouch, big star of the Breitbart Kids channel, 4-year-old outright shot kid, makes YouTube videos in his parents' bathroom in which he makes a little squeaky duck say ducky like bath time because only ducky allowed in bath and not Mexicans. So it's a strange social phenomenon, and I guess, you know, within the multiple concentric bubbles I like to live in, I find it quite hard to understand this kind of the popularity of this kind of basically bile brewing acupuncturists into the eyeballs of social cohesion. That's the way I see it.
Well, it's been brewing for a long time because it's.
And by acupuncturists, I don't mean that they're curing it. Do not put acupuncture needles into an eyeball.
It's really been brewing since 2008. Right. And that when it all boils down to it, all of this kind of bile, particularly the stuff that started in America, can basically be rooted back to the fact that for a time there was a group of Americans who suddenly discovered they did not like being told what to do by a black guy. That's the real roots of it.
And right, because the Bugle did start in late 2007.
That's
so,
right. Well, and the ethos of it is it seems to be against sort of caving into political correctness. But it's all really a cover for just racism. And ultimately, the alt-right are just Nazis, but they've just got a different name. It's a bit like when...
They don't like being called Nazis, though.
They don't like being called Nazis.
Not at all.
They get very upset. But it's exactly like when Opal Fruits changed their name to Starburst. These are Starburst racists. And that's... Now, for American buglers, Opal Fruits was a very popular sweet in England that changed its name to Starburst. I don't know whether you had that in America. And also for American buglers, I am Nish Kumar, a comedian in Britain. I've just realised I've done 5 bugles, and I imagine there's some Americans listening to this thinking, why has Andy bought his weird friend?
Really? I've done 300 episodes on that.
No, you've done 4,018 episodes.
Well, and not just that, you, Andy, and you, Chris, have caved into the PC lobby since the rebrand of the Bugle. I've seen the other guest hosts. It's just a parade of women and darkies. Absolutely unbelievable.
I was going to change the name of the show.
You have absolutely caved in to people who were critics of the Bugle from 2007 to 2016 for its incredibly undiverse makeup. You've caved into the hashtag Bugle So White campaign. You've bowed to the PC lobby.
Yeah, right. Yes. Yeah. I can't defend it. Nish, as I said, I'm having trouble maintaining my mental equilibrium because I read too much on the internet. You scroll on any news article until you get to the comments, or if you click the wrong link, you end up basically web surfing in the equivalent of the moment that they open the Ark of the Covenant in Indiana Jones. Was that a documentary? I can't. It was a drama doc, I think.
No, it wasn't, because the Nazis were the bad guys. Right,
so, I think what we need to do is start counter-pretending that everything is okay. So we are now going to have an official Bugle calm the f*** down section.
Yes.
Calm news today. A butterfly fluttered from a pretty flower this afternoon onto a picnic rug, impressing the enchanted picnickers, before fluttering off again, pitching and lilting in the spring breeze, then disappearing from sight, leaving behind only a transient sense of the fragility of the delicately wondrous beauty of life. Meanwhile, reports estimate that more than 25,000 people around the world unknowingly had a nice relaxing cup of tea at the same time yesterday afternoon. Drinking tea, the renowned infusion, is thought by many scientists to be considerably better at engendering a sense of calm and well-being than other activities such as taking heroin, cockfighting, clickbaiting, and politics. And finally, a 25-year-old man from France was reported to be feeling soothed and spiritually equilibrious after listening to a CD compilation of great classical guitar music and then falling asleep on the sofa for a couple of hours.
Ah oui, le guitar.
Yes, the guitar was nice. It made me feel nice. That was nice. It's really cool, and nice. And finally, sport... Try bowls. That looks really quite hard to have a fight about.
Azerbaijan news now, Andy. This is one of the most incredible stories I've ever come across.
Right.
The Azerbaijani president, Ilham Aliyev, has appointed his wife as vice president of Azerbaijan. Now, two details make this even spicier as a story.
Right.
Number one, there has never been a vice president of Azerbaijan before, so he has created the position for her. And number two, it is also their wedding anniversary.
What a gift.
What a gift, Andy. It is my girlfriend's birthday this weekend, and she is not going to be happy with book tokens.
I'm starting to think that me giving my missus a copy of my own DVD is looking a little bit hollow.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine she's furious she hasn't been invited to be a guest host of this show.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've got my sister, so I mean, in terms of nepotism, I don't have too many legs to stand on.
But your sister's got impeccable credentials as a podcaster, Andy.
Are you saying Mrs. Aliyev does not have impeccable credentials as a
I'm just
vice
saying,
president?
When it comes to nepotism, you are way out of your depth, Osman. Because in 2013, the Organised Crime and Corruption Reporting Project named Ilham Aliyev Corruption's Person of the Year. Huge accolade.
That is a hotly contested title as well.
Yeah, and there's a lot of money changing hands over it as well, I imagine.
Very lively betting syndicate.
Yeah, I imagine there's a couple of people who were in line to win but mysteriously took a dive.
Yeah, some Indian politicians who bizarrely committed no corruption in the year and then ended up in a very fancy looking Jaguar.
Yeah, it's absolutely extraordinary. It's all sort of part of his wider attempt to essentially turn the position into a monarchy, because he's also ditched term limits after a 2009 referendum and ditched the age requirement for being the president, which is, they believe, is paving the way for his 19-year-old son to run once he's had enough. It's just really good at a time where we're seeing, you know, so much open and aggressive corruption and corruption that's fueled by so much. Just some people are still kicking it old school and just relaxing and easing in and appointing their family members. Unfortunately, we in the West have sort of got no legs to stand on because a journalist who is from Azerbaijan has said a pro-government lawyer from the country said that if Donald Trump is able to appoint his son-in-law as advisor, why can't Aliyev appoint his wife as vice president? At which point the journalist in question has just gone, ugh! That's Khadija Ismailova. Khadija Ismailova, who has expressed her frustration. We've lost the moral high ground, Andy. There was a time where we could have found that sort of corruption funny.
Yeah. Oh, bring those days back. Bugle feature section now, fashion. It's been London Fashion Week this week. Nish, I know you've been
to all the big events.
I saw you there on at least three of the... How many fashion days in a fashion week, Chris?
Four?
Eight? Four days. Man, you can carry off a diaphanous chiffon unisex blouse way better than I thought you could.
I was too busy dealing with some disappointed people who had turned up having misread a sign thinking it was London Fascism Week. They were not impressed to see me, or indeed you there, Andy.
Sensational week. Some of the big trends. The designer Anya Hindmarch went in for that. That's an actual designer. Yeah. And I know I'm a slight boy who cried wolf issue here. Going, socks and slippers seem to be in from her. Basically nursing home chic. Or something to do with Brexit, I think, reflecting where the balance of voting power now lies. If you can't beat him, dress like him. Also, an amazing show, I don't know if you saw this one, guys, by Greginson's Practical Industrial and Workplace Safety Wear. High-vis tabards, very much in. I mean, they are the clothing of the... clothing of choice of the era, merging the age of practicality and the age of vanity. You want and need to be seen. In London Fashion Week, coats, shirts, trousers, skirts, dresses and jackets, all symptomatic of the metropolitan elite. They've got to go. Metal greaves are in.
Oof.
That was the big news. It's a combative age and you have to have lower leg protection. You never know when someone might want to whack you in the shins with a mace these days for thinking about a fact they disagree with. Togas, still out. That's Brexit. Romans, bit European. Polar bear skin bikinis are in. Democracy has voted for global warming and fashion is reflecting that. Might as well get on board. The hip facial expressions on the catwalk this year. Now, this is always one of the fascinations of London Fashion Week. Just glorious range of facial expressions you see from the models. And in this week, f***ing grumpy for the 36 year in a row. The full strop was quite widely seen. Borderline hostage, that was quite a strong showing. Harrowing remembrance of a deep personal trauma. Just watch the news, look. That was very much in evidence. Vegan doing work experience in an abattoir. Seen many of the catwalk shows. And three quarters of the way through an 18-hour shift as a manual sewage sifter at a wastewater treatment plant. There were sort of a lot of models rocking that look as well. But the one I most enjoyed was that distinctive look just given out by an umpire in a dubious decision at a crucial stage of the fourth innings of a test match look. That's, which is basically a combination of all the above.
Yeah.
Shame that my favourite look missed out. Desperately suppressing a fart on a crowded train.
That was
one.
The title of a Rembrandt self-portrait, I think. The star designers this week, Brazilian designer Couturinho, went in with convict chic, ball and chain, a 12,000 carats obsidescent onyx ball plus a chain made of interlocked faux stuffed eels. David Cameron, former Prime Minister, dashing collection of hedgehog pelt socks themed around the feeling of eternal guilt-ridden regret, reportedly the itchiest socks ever. To help you truly experience the restless feeling that you've been the agent of something terrible and uncurable. The Trump effect seen in the designs of Mombasa Tipple Vimkovic with the new stove trousers, a cross between a stovepipe hat and a pair of trousers, inspired by Trump predecessor and theatre sceptic Abraham Lincoln. So it's been a big week. And in fact, in partnership with London Fashion Week, we have a free giveaway. This week, audio fashion accessory. You can express yourself or someone else's self with fashionableness. Just need a Bluetooth speaker tied to your top, and you can play the following fashionable phrases on a loop to show that you're right up with the latest trends in fashion. Who am I? And what do I mean by this? Put me only in the category of the uncategorizable. Look at me and wonder how the f*** this happened. So there you go, that's the end of the fashion section. We have to get out of this studio because we've slightly overrun.
And we've talked about fashion.
And we've talked about fashion, the fashion and fascism show.
The fashionism. In five bugles, you and I have talked about a lot of subjects we're not qualified to talk about.
Yeah, that's what this show's all about, Nick.
Somehow, London Fashion Week feels like the thing we are least, largely because you and I look like we've both been interrupted on our way to an Art Garfunkel tribute show.
Yes. To be honest, there's only one subject in the world that I am qualified to talk about, and that is arcane cricket statistics. I'm not sure it would have lasted 300 episodes with that.
You one up on me.
So we have to leave it there because we are about to be thrown out. We'll have some of your emails next week. Do come and see my tour show. I just had to rearrange my Nottingham show from today as we record due to Storm Doris. Better names, please. It's now going to be on Thursday, the 9th of March, instead. Also, coming up, if you get this in time, Friday the 24th, Wolverhampton, Saturday the 25th, Southampton, and 28th in Canterbury. Yes, then the 9th of March in Nottingham. Then Melbourne at the end of March through April.
Oh, great. Very jealous.
Yes.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, let's hope so.
Yeah.
Yeah, for the audience at least. Whether I enjoy it or not is, and it's kind of hard at the moment. I just end up most of my shows thinking, oh, what happened to my planet? Never mind. As long as you have a laugh about it, that's all that counts.
It's another planet.
That's right. Well, yeah, they've just discovered seven new planets.
Oh, great.
It's fun. We are off the f***ing hook, people.
Yeah, let's see if we can find one of those to f*** up beyond recognition. Speaking of things being fucked up beyond recognition, I am reprising my tour show at the Soho Theatre Thursday to Saturday in March. All 3 days, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, through the whole of March. Tickets, very available, due to the fact that I forgot the run was on and I've not promoted it. Please come and bring up to 100 friends per night.
Goodbye, buglers.
Goodbye.